A lot of people came in after I introduced Martha, and I just want to repeat again, in the program it's a little ambiguous. It gives both our names as organizers and moderators. Martha is the organizer of this event. She did all the work. I agreed to be a co-moderator on site, help her run to the audiovisual site if she needs it or whatever, and time her talk. But with that, I also mentioned that Martha has a PhD in science education. I have no formal training in educational theory whatsoever, and I suspect that I'm like a lot of other college teachers. I graduated in June, I was teaching in August, and I had a little bit of TA experience. And with that, I guess I consider myself coming from the school of monkey see, monkey do. We all had a lot of teachers, and some of them we admired, and more specifically, I tried to emulate those things that I saw and liked and tried to avoid those things that I saw and I didn't like. So that's where I'm coming from. Martha asked me to give a few examples, and I'm going to give three from my teaching, and at the end she will take a few minutes, and if possible, if it is possible, she'll try to tie it back to the educational theory. The three examples I'm going to talk about come from these two classes that Martha mentioned. The general entomology class, I will be giving the final exam when I get back Thursday morning, but it's typically 40 or so students, and they come from a lot of different colleges, obviously arts and sciences and agriculture, but also education and others. So it's quite a diverse group. Biological control class is a graduate class and fairly typical of entomology graduate classes. I specifically am going to talk about three different things that I do in these classes. I'm going to touch on them. Obviously, I'm not going to give the lecture, but one is a lecture. One is the insect collection that almost all general ent classes have, and a written assignment, one example of a written assignment from the graduate biocontrol class. The first of these is a lecture that I give on the very second day that we meet for the semester. And the first day, of course, is the usual organizational stuff. But one of the reasons that I do this is it's been my experience that those students that have been through general biology get a bushel of suborganismal biology and not much organismal and upward. And given that we're going to be spending a significant portion of the lab time in this class learning to classify and recognize insects, I'm trying to make a case and set up a framework for this with several objectives. I'm only going to deal here today primarily with the first one, that is trying to convince these students who I have just met a couple of days earlier and convince them that this is worth doing. Excuse me one second. So we're in the first class lecture that actually has some substance to it. And I'm trying to get a lot of feedback from these students, get them to open up. And I often will start with, okay, let's suppose that you guys want to buy some oranges. Where do you go? And of course, a lot of people, well, go to the grocery store. I mean, don't go to the hardware store, go to the grocery store. Fine, that's good. You go to the grocery store, you go in the door, it's a big place. Where in the grocery store do you go? And some of them will say, well, I go to the fruit and vegetable section or the produce section, whatever they call it. And that's all great. I say, okay, you go over there and you search high and low and you find apples and you find bananas, no oranges. And then you start wandering around. If you're lucky enough to find somebody that works there, you ask them, where are the oranges, please? And they say, oh, they're over with the toilet paper. And I asked the students, I said, okay, what's your reaction to that? And again, just trying to sell them on the point that whether they think about it or not, we make our everyday decisions based on some classification that we carry around with us, however trivial it may seem to us. And of course, in trying again to sell them, we're going to be learning a scientific classification system. I show them several slides, one at a time. I put a couple up here, but you show them something like a cicada, and you say, okay, what have you guys heard this called, or what do you call it? And you convince them that nothing is wrong. It's just, I'm asking you, what have you heard it called? And you'll hear obviously a bunch of answers, cicada, locust, jarfly, whatever, and similarly with a few others. So that is trying to convince them as to why common names aren't good enough by themselves. And then for this very lecture, because the students probably don't have much background with insects, and certainly because plants are easier to see in a lecture room from a distance, I want to bring something live and real in there. I go out around the building where I teach to various trees around the building, and I clip off some twigs, and I put them in a black garbage bag, and I bring them to this lecture. And I reach in, and I pull out a red oak or pin oak, something that looks like an oak, and I say, okay, what kind of tree do you guys think this is? And a whole bunch of people will say, it's an oak. And great, that's good. And then I'll pull the second one out and say, okay, and there may be a forestry or a horticulture major. Oh, that's a chestnut oak. Great, wonderful. And then I'll pull the third one out and I'll say, okay, and then it's kind of deafening silence. And maybe somebody will venture that it's a willow. I say, well, okay, close. It's a willow oak. I say, okay, all of these are oaks. And then I reach back in the bag and I pull out three almost identical twigs that have something else on them. And then I'm trying to make the point here about diagnostic characters, things that animals that are grouped together share in common, and then we move into the really boring and dry part of the lecture on phylogeny and so forth. So anyway, this part is the justification cell. I'll also throw in a couple of others there, typically a maple and always some type of conifer, and I'll ask them, of these five, which one is least related to the other four? And you hear them all saying pine, pine. And again, compliment them and tell them, you guys know something about relatedness intuitively already or from your previous learning. Okay, the second example that I want to run through is how I handle the teaching of the insect collection part of this course. Like I said, almost every general ant course requires it. I'm certainly not going to go into what my requirements are or how we grade it or any of that stuff, but I feel that some of these are things that students gain by going out and doing their own collections. And one that surprised me, that top one from my early days, and I've come more to appreciate it, I don't know how many students will say late in the semester, I had no idea that all these different kinds of insects were underfoot and all around me. And I think if there's anything that these students take away from doing this, that's perhaps the most important. And I didn't think that 33 years ago when I started. They do get some other things out of it as well. Second thing I've learned in doing this collection, when I was relatively young and starting this, I made some requirements, and we had our first lab meeting, and I wanted to get on to other stuff, and I would hand out the requirements and I would quickly run over them. I'd loan them their collecting supplies and say, go do it and bring me a collection at the end of the semester. And boy, did I get a mixed bag. I got some good collections and I got some things that I don't even like to think about. And I realized real quick that I've got to take this more seriously from my end and put a lot more into it if I'm expecting decent product on the back end. And some of these things have evolved over time, but most of them I've been doing for quite a long time now. The very first day that we meet, I devote my first two of 15 total lab periods to the collection. The first day that we have our lab, we spend time with regard to the collecting supplies, what to do and what not to do, particularly with the kill jar, with these supplies. We go over the requirements in great detail, and a lot of questions will come up, and these are very helpful to, you know, feedback to the students. And something I started probably 15 years ago is actually bring to this lab a Japanese beetle and a leafhopper, a fair-sized leafhopper that we have collected a few weeks prior to classes starting and putting them in the freezer. And we actually have each student, we give them their first two insects for their collection, and they can turn them back into us at the end if they wish. But it breaks the ice. They go through putting that pin through the insect for many of them the first time. It gives them a chance to see where to put the pin. We get their textbook open, show them that chapter that they would otherwise never look at, about how a number of illustrations of where the pin goes, how high up the pin the insect's to be, and so forth. And then we repeat it with the leafhopper. And it takes a few minutes for the fingernail polish to dry, and they're ready to go. They're off and running. The second lab session, we're fortunate that we have a nice arboretum on campus there. And this class is broken into two lab sessions. I repeat the lab, do it on Tuesday, and then repeat that lab on Thursday, half and half. We all meet for lecture. But each of those lab sections, we meet at the arboretum for a walking field trip. The purpose that we tell them, anyway, is to help them with their collection. And that's really true. But there's more that we're trying to accomplish than just that. When we're out there, the arboretum kind of personnel kind of frowned on the students that day or later practicing their Barry Bond swing on the flower tops. And we talk about the fact that insects fly upward often when they're trapped, and we show, as with this young lady, how if you see something on a flower that you want to get, kind of rattle the plant around and it'll go up. And then some of the students won't remember what you just told them, that insects fly up when they're in a trap space. And you have an opportunity to correct that. And we walk around, we being myself and a volunteer grad student TA for each of the sections, and we spot these types of things and try to correct some of the things that we see. And we help them with regard to where to look, how to capture, and things like how to get the stinging insects from the net into the jar without getting stung. It may not seem like much, but I think it really helps break the ice again and get them off and running. And then a couple more slides with regard to some of the things that we do as the semester goes on. Some of these are pretty obvious, an extra field trip or two. We have an example collection that's available to them throughout the semester, always one that was done by a student a couple of years back. This particular one was done by a music major, incidentally. And this is something I started about probably 20 years ago. We actually had them bring the collection, such as it is, in early October to us, myself and the two grad students who are helping, so that we go through it and give them a written sheet. Simply, one column says this is what you need, this column says this is what you have. Because in early October, we are nowhere close to having gone through all the families and things. They don't know them yet, and they want to know where they stand. And there's also this subtle thing of also, hey, we've got to show this to the teacher. We got to get our stuff out of the freezer and get it pinned and get it organized, and I think that helps. A number of years back, we set up Berlasi funnels in the classroom for classes, not just my class, but others use these. And we typically, in October, after they've had the inventory and panic has set in, and we have their attention, we show them how to Berlasi leaf litter and so on. And we have a few sweep nets, a few aquatic nets that are available for short-term loan over the weekend. Demand goes up right after the inventory to check those out. And all through the semester, we offer not to identify their insects for them, but if they have something they think it's so-and-so, we will say, yes, that's right, or if it's not, try it again. And if it's a really tough one, we'll give them some guidance of kind of where to go. So in the end, I think our collections have improved quite a bit. We graded these just before coming to the meeting, and this is fairly typical. 41 students in this particular class, and 30 of the 41 earned an A or a B on the collection. And I won't go into how we grade them, but trust me, it is theoretically possible to earn a negative grade on this assignment. And 33 years, I have had two students do that, actually do that. I rounded up to a zero. That's the truth. It's not easy, but it's possible to earn a negative score. The last thing is a written assignment that one of the written assignments that I use in the graduate class in biological control. And I do a number of these. But this particular one, seems like I went one too far. I do three such assignments, typically two written and one oral presentation. One of the things that all of these assignments share in common is that they are all brief with regard to the final product. I try to get the students to have a 2 or 3 page paper or a 10 to 12 minute presentation. That's one part of it. A second thing that I do with all of these graduate assignments, although we're all working for a particular general topic, Every student has a specific target that he or she is working on. In other words, every paper or every presentation is different from what some other student is doing. And the reason I do that, right or wrong, is because on the one hand, since they're working toward a common goal, let's just say all the students are researching in the day of internet current, up-to-date, ongoing projects out there right now in biological control. They're all doing the same thing, but every one of them has to come up with a different current ongoing project. In the case of the one example I'm going to talk about, has to do with the simple idea, what parasitoid species attack host X, whatever species that might be. They can share how they find this information, et cetera, but in the end, they're going to have to produce their own paper about their assignment. What this does is it makes a situation where I have to do a lot of extra work on the front end to make sure I'm setting this up properly, but it has a reward on the back end that I'm not reading the same paper over and over and over, which it actually does have a payoff from the teacher's standpoint. The one that I'm going to talk about today is the one assignment of these. They vary from time to time. I taught this course. I teach it every other spring. I taught it in spring of 2006, and I will teach it next semester. But this particular assignment is the only one that I've used consistently. And it's very simple in that they're asked to take some particular host species and determine all the known parasitoids that attack it. And some of the things that I'm trying to do here is to get the idea of just how many parasitoid species often attack a particular host. Also, how variable the stages are, eggs, larvae, pupae, whatever, that get attacked. And also helping them to find out how they go about getting this type of information and maybe begin to develop some familiarity for those that didn't already have it with where the major parasitoids are taxonomically. And finally, down there, as in many fields, you run into lots of issues with systematics and synonymies and so forth, and they will without question run into this. So in the course of this, I'm showing you part of the handout that we used last time, and if I'm in error here, it's from over detail in spelling out what I want the students to do. And I'll just draw attention to the part that I highlighted here. I tell them exactly what I want this paper to contain in terms of text. I want them to give some background about the host and then tell me some summary about what they have found about the parasitoids. There's a table that we'll come to in a second that summarizes also what they have found. Now, when I select the host that they're going to use, that's where I'll be spending some of my Christmas holidays doing this again. I've never yet repeated a host, so that takes that out. I've got a very long list of already used, and I go into Krumbine's books and other places, and I'm trying to find a host that has somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 20 parasitoid species known to attack it. I don't want the students doing busy work on some of those hosts that are known to have 50, 60 different species attacking them. I don't want that. On the other hand, I find some very interesting hosts sometimes that only have known 4 or 5 species, so sometimes I'll put together pairs and say, okay, if you want, you can do these two, or you can do one. And in the end, I'm trying to get them to have something that will have 10 to 20 species. Again, lots and lots of ways you could do this, and I spell out a lot of details about it. One of the reasons I do that is when this is completed, and before I mark them up and give them back, I make photocopies of each student's paper, collate them, put them on reserve so the students, if they wish, can see what each other has done. And at least this gets the format similar for other students to look at. And when students start complaining about how much specificity I'm asking, exactly how I want this laid out, I remind them when they get their degree and they go to work in extension or research or teaching or for government or whatever, they're going to be asked to write reports, they're going to be writing proposals, and yeah, you're going to have it spelled out pretty fine detail how it's going to be needed, and might as well get started on it now. I then give them also on that handout an example, albeit hypothetical, of how I want it organized. And with regard to taxonomically, I use Dr. Triplehorn's and Johnson's book. This would be following the 6th edition, I believe, and it will have to be turned around to follow the 7th edition for these two orders. But in any event, And I can use some purely hypothetical examples. Patton was a governor in Kentucky that got caught in, he got caught. And so anyway, and finally some instructions about the tables, about how these are set up, and the cautionary note that I mentioned earlier about the systematics, so kind of another lesson, hopefully, that they will learn in the process of doing this. Now, I want to basically tell you what we just talked about, and again, the idea here, when Martha asked me to do this, and she gave me full free rein to pick whatever I wanted to, and if these have nothing to do with the generative learning model, that's my fault and not hers, but, and also, if there is any connection, it was an accident. Lastly, I make no claims to always succeeding with students. I have failures. I do. And it's frustrating at times. One of the lessons I've learned is you just can't beat yourself up over the ones that you cannot reach. You get students that come in that are a joy to teach. They arrive with some innate ability. They're eager to learn. And all you have to do is not mess up. And that's the fun part. And then you get those that are challenging. And some of those you can reach. And that's a real reward. But again, occasionally you get those that you just can't reach. And enough said. Incidentally, that's my dog, and that's one of my wife's cats.
Any background in educational theory, but almost everything he did was right down the line, exactly what you would want a teacher to do when they're teaching. You can see why I recruited him, I hope, as I took his biological control course, and I don't know which was more exciting, learning the biological control material he was teaching, or seeing how everything he did fit what I had just learned in my PhD program at the University of Iowa. It's like, wow, it really does work. This is what they're talking about. So if you look at your handout, this is the general handout, the worksheet we're done with forever now, unless you want to keep it. The thing about using carefully worded headings and subheadings in his written material, that assignment that he showed, the biological control assignment, that's exactly what he was doing. There was no question, in my mind at least, exactly what target he wanted us to hit. Now, he pointed out at the very end there that some students just don't seem to want to learn. That's true. One of the things that is at the bottom of this is there's a note. It says, at each step of the model, the learner takes increasingly active role in the process and also takes increasing responsibility for his or her own learning. In other words, you can get them through the first steps of the generative learning model. You can get them through the first part of constructivism. But if they don't take responsibility, they really won't get up to the rest of those steps, and they will not subsume it into long-term memory, and they'll barely remember anything you tried to teach them. And that isn't your fault. It really isn't. There's just nothing you can do about that. You can try as best you can and do all these strategies to try to help them actively engage, but if they won't take responsibility, they're grown-ups. You have to let them behave that way. That's the advantage of teaching college, is they are all grown-ups. Now, I want to not run into Laurel's time here. One of the things he did is he gave exemplars and non-exemplars, and that's on here, and if I could see it better, I could find out exactly where it is. I should know my own handout. But if you look down the teaching strategies, there's one that talks about giving examples and non-examples for particular step things three. You want them to learn. Step three. Thank you, Carol. She's got better eyes than I have.
I don't.
Okay. Now we're in context. He did that with the Oaks, remember? He showed an example of things that you do use and do not use for key characteristics. He had the students actively engage with that. He did that with showing the oranges in the toilet paper. That's not the way you do classification. He has a whole series of things he does when he's teaching where he shows you don't do it this way. Don't use the bug net by knocking the head off the flower. Do it this way. So he's showing how not to do it as well as how to do it. And all the way through his presentation, he was showing how he helps them make connections to things in their own life, things that they previously learned, things that they experience. And that is why I absolutely loved him as a teacher. And that is why, whether he knows it or not, it's not an accident that he was using the generative learning model to direct his teaching. I think it's convergent evolution. This is the way people learn, and they're going to learn that way whether or not they've been taught to learn that way. And if you figure that out through 33 years of experience of teaching, you can teach them as though you have a PhD in science education. You just don't need to go through the pain of another PhD. Any questions?